Very good, and welcome to the last Fed Report call of November 2023. We'll get right into it. I know people are eager to celebrate the holidays, or at least eager to not be in the office, judging by the calls that I've had and made. So where are we? We're going to look at stocks first. Obviously, there is some seasonal strength coming into the end of the year. We think that the market could have a pullback first, but basically we're, you know, still looking for a close, you know, up from here. How much up from here, I don't know, but up from here into the end of the year. We'd like to see a pullback that doesn't go much below 440 on the spider. If we saw that, we would buy it. We've had some questions about tax selling lists, and we'll talk about that first. Generally, the way we play tax bounces, and again, I apologize for longstanding subscribers here because they know this, but for new people, we tend to use the old January effect methodology as detailed by Norman Fosbach in his excellent book, Stock Market Logic. That means you buy at the end of December for the month of January. So we generally start our tax loss list with buys on December 15th, and we add to those positions on December 30th if they're within certain price parameters, and we hold them until the last trading day of January 2024, which in this case, actually, I don't know what day that is. Let's have a quick look at it. But we generally hold those through January. In this case, that will be January 28th. That is 29/30, January 31st this year. It's a Wednesday. So that's how we're going to do it. We should be out with a list in a couple of weeks. We've also had questions about what we call our hedge fund chasers. And what that is there are certain stocks in the marketplace that institutions want to own and want to show on statements at the end of the year. Those stocks generally have a bit of a run into the end of the year because they're bought by the institutions. One of the ways you look at those stocks or look for those stocks is to look for any stocks that are trading within 10% of their high. So what I would do in your models is take a quick look and see if there's anything within 10% of its yearly high, and if it starts to move, you can jump on that. It'll probably end up closing on the high for the year. There are other stocks like that. You know, in some years we put out a list of those. This year, you know, so far we haven't. Maybe we'll mention some, but most of them, since are I guess what you would call, you know, the usual suspects. In other words, people are going to be looking at NVIDIA, you know, Microsoft. AVGO is a good one, but there's others. We've showed some in the chart book as well. The point is that those are trading vehicles going into the end of the year. You know, it looks to me more like this is going to be a relatively sedate close out to the year. People really, and again, I've got a pretty good way of looking at that because I'm calling offices trying to find people, you know, all the time. A lot of people are out. I mean, certainly I think I'd be curious to hear anyone on the call say, you know, are the desks around him filled? And of course, I just had a thought here and I didn't even think of this. With remote work, does that mean people aren't working or does it just mean people aren't in the office? That's an interesting question. I don't know the answer to that. But, you know, the upshot is we think we're going to do okay into the end of the year. The other big question, of course, is the market going to broaden out at all? And we're seeing some signs that it is. We've had a number of questions on things like, should I sell all my RSP or should I sell my SPLV? We're not really selling value here. I think there's a good chance that some of these value names do okay. SPLV, because it's designed to be low volatility, I certainly would consider selling that. I'd rather have SPGP or, frankly, XLG. if the market doesn't broaden out, and we're hopefully going to have a call with some people on a fundamental basis on that in January. We're in discussions with a group that has got some insight on that fundamentally. But we'd rather have SPGP or XLG in models than RSP here. Those are two sides of the same bet. In other words, if the market doesn't broaden out, XLG is going to be a top performer, and it already is. And if the market does, RSP will probably turn into a better performer than SPY next year. And that's actually what we think is going to happen and what we hope is going to happen. You know, one question, and this is something we'll Jeff and I can talk about, or we can certainly mention, later on, is, one of the hallmarks of an impending bear market is a narrow market going up. And the real problem with that, as analysis, is that is a condition that is almost always present at major tops, but it's also a condition that's present at other times that simply goes away. One of the things that happened in before the 2000 top was Chuck Clow, who's a really nice man, very interesting fellow, former chief investment strategist of Merrill Lynch, got bearish in 1998 because the market wasn't broad enough and ended up losing his job right as the market peaked. So, the question is, if the market isn't broadening out, obviously you have to go with it and play some of the narrowness, with the idea being that if it doesn't broaden out and the stocks that were leaders start to blow up, it's going to be much more severe. You have to get rid of things at that point. But we've seen numerous instances in the last 10, 11 years, publishing the Fred Report, where the market was narrow for a while and just broadened out, and that's the real problem. So, yes, it's a concern that the market isn't broadening out as much as people would like. But do you react to it by selling everything now? I think the answer to that is no. And you look at things, I'm looking at IJR, for example, I'm looking at IWM. IJR and IWM actually have, favorable bottoming formations on it. You could certainly make the case that IWM, and Jack, maybe we'll write about this in the weekly. That would be a good thing to write about in the weekly. But you can certainly make the case that IWM from October to now is making a head and shoulders bottom, with the right shoulder being higher than the left shoulder, all the things that you would normally expect to see if there was real demand. So we're not counting this thing out yet, but that's the answer to people's question, what will happen if the market doesn't broaden out? And as I say, in January, we're hoping to have a little bit more fundamental clarity on why the market should broaden out as well. In terms of the bond market, TLT has held above 90. The next stop is 95. Obviously, nothing moves in a straight line, but we're expecting this to get to 95 by the end of the year, and bonds are a hold for us. GLD, I will run this weekend the accumulation models on gold again, but what seems to be happening here as of our last look at the accumulation models, which was a couple of weeks ago, gold is experiencing its seasonal rally into January, but not on real professional accumulation. Now, what does that mean from the standpoint of trading gold? What that means is it's a rental. It is not full ownership. Okay? In other words, this is not a long-term investment, but it is a rental, and it's a rental that could give us another 5, 6% or so on the upside. A lot of resistance, obviously, at 190. We've hit there and failed. But the real key for me is you're long gold until sometime in January. You keep raising your stops. A good way to do that, and we've talked about it on various calls and in various reports, is the parabolic system that's on your quote machines. And the main thing is to be ready to sell gold and be shut of it sometime in January. In terms of the commodities, we're looking at DBC here. That's also on a buy signal and starting to move up. We've looked at some of the back months in oil. Oil looks like it's also ready to move up. And the real question for most of our advisors on the call is, if you're going to play oil, what's the best way to do it? And obviously, one of the problems with XLE that we've seen, which is the main oil ETF, is that there were two corporate actions in the two biggest components of that ETF, Chevron and Exxon. Those stocks are lagging, so probably the best bet to play oil is some of the individual oil stocks or the equally weighted ETF from Invesco, which is RSPG. And sure enough, if you look at RSPG, it's trading a little bit better. We note that PSCE, the small cap oil ETF, was in the chart book, and that certainly could rally. But in this case, we think the best way to play is probably stocks like RIG, some of the smaller oil stocks, some of the and RSPG, the equally weighted oil stock ETF. In terms of emerging markets, I'm going to take just a quick look at that. Let me have a quick look at EEM. You know, we still have the China effect. We are seeing some favorable action in some of the Argentinian stuff. ARGT, Argentina, has had some favorable political news. EWZ, Brazil, is a better-looking chart now. And that's the real key for us for emerging markets, not China. The real question, as we've talked about in various meetings around the country, is how do you underweight China in emerging markets? And for us, the best ETF for that is EELV. I will also say probably the best solutions for emerging markets are mutual funds, active management. That area is so opaque, it's very hard to buy an index and have everything in the index work. In terms of Europe, we have no changes. EWL is trading well. It's trading better than Germany. It's trading better than IFA. And again, you know, maybe we'll take a look, Jack, at Italy, Spain versus, and those usually rally at this time of year, versus the haves in Europe. Europe's haves and have-nots, I guess, would be a good thing for the weekly. But we still think the U.S. has got a good chance of being the real outperformer here. With that, I'm actually going to pass the call over to Jeff Garbaz. You know, not a lot happening that's surprising here, and that's good, and I hope everyone's sort of having a relaxing week or so as we get into the Christmas holiday. Jeff, do you have any questions for us?
Yep, I got a couple. So let's start with why everything did well in November. Isn't it just a case? Bloomberg's lead story this morning is, biggest blowout in bonds since the 1980s sparks every asset class rally. So isn't it just that rates came down? But if rates go back up, then all this is for naught.
Jeff, the other thing that did happen going into November from October was the market was decently oversold and should have rallied. For example, if you look at let's take a look at SPY as an example and look at the weekly stochastic. What you see is in October, we were oversold and positioned for a rally and for a daily recycle and a rally, which we got on the weekly SPY, on the weekly QQQ, you know, on various, pretty much all the indexes. Those indexes are now overbought. Obviously, when you look at bonds, bonds were also in position to have a weekly recycle. That actually came later than the one on stocks, though, if you look at TLT. So they're coming up for a reason for something where we should have had a rally because the market was oversold. Now the real question is, the market is no longer oversold. The market is overbought. So what I think is correct is, if there's a catalyst like suddenly rising rates, that could hurt stocks much more than if the market was oversold.
Yeah, I mean, my bigger problem is that the Russell hasn't done, I'm not going to say the word, but it just has not performed in the last 11 trading days. It's stuck in a range.
Diddly is a nice word, Jeff. I use diddly.
Yeah. I'll go diddly. There you go. That's
yeah.
PG version, not even PG-13. But it's stuck between 177.5 and 180. and it and yesterday it got above 180 and just totally failed. And even mid cap is just not performing. And if we look at the so someone made the argument to me that like the reason that the, these things took off was on the 14th we got the latest CPI data, and it did outperform if you took the day before, but if you took the day of, it's still lagging against the S&P. The Russell's up since the 14th of November, it's up 29 basis points, and the S&P is up 1.31%. So I think the real question I have is this thing done for now?
I think we're due for a pullback. And, Jeff, let's go back in time. Let us put on our time travel hats for a minute and go back to when you and I were talking in 1999. Okay? Remember that feeling we had when we talked about going into the end of the year in 1999 when we were remarking on some of the indexes like the Qs, and the spiders and stuff going up every day, but our portfolios were not performing, right? You remember that?
Yeah.
And people were remarking on that, but they weren't nervous about it. And what that meant was we were set up for the biggest decline that we'd seen really, you know, on a long-term basis. In other words, it lasted 2-3 years. Since, you know, 74, right? That's why we have the concern that the market is not broadening out, right? We're having the same phenomena now. If you're looking at the Qs near new highs, the average portfolio is nowhere near new highs, right?
Correct.
That is the concern right now. You can see that exemplified in the way the Russell is trading. So the real question is going to be, and I agree with you, I mean, this is a concern. It's something you have to look at. The real question is going to be, when is the Russell going to get going, if it is, right? And I think it's safe to say, Jeff, that it's probably not going to get going in the last 2-3 weeks of the year, right? Because you know how these institutional portfolio managers are. They are looking to buy the hot stocks to put in their portfolios. They're still looking at doing some tax selling. They're not really looking to position in a big way for next year yet. That will come in January, right? So, yeah, I'm concerned about that. But at the same time, you know, we don't have the sort of fundamental setup, I think, that we did in 99 or even in 2007, right? In other words, in 99, and again, we're putting on our time travel hat because that was actually one of my best forecast years. I quit my job at Robinson Humphrey, sold all my Citigroup stock, and announced that the NASDAQ was going to go to 1,500 when the NASDAQ was at 4,000, right? And that those turned out to be very good decisions overall. But the real thing around that is, Jeff, we all, if you recall our feelings back then, we all knew something was wrong, right? We just didn't know when it was going to hit, but almost every intelligent person was saying, there's something wrong with the market here. It's going up because the stocks that have no earnings and no businesses are leading, right? We don't have anything like that here. During the real estate crisis in 2007, the market kept going up for a while. Even after Bear Stearns got in trouble, the market kept going up for a while. And we were all sitting around at Merrill Lynch. I'll never forget Rich Bernstein and David Rosenberg talking about the mortgage crisis and all that was wrong. But the market just didn't seem to care for a while. But again, the point was that decline, 2008-2009, we all knew something was wrong before then. So the real question is there something wrong now? And I'm just not so sure there is. Right? I mean, what is wrong now? Right? Maybe too high a level of debt, but the country's had an extremely high level of debt for, God, the last 20 years. So if we don't see a good, solid broadening out of the market by the end of January next year, we're going to have to start being a lot more cautious. But I don't think it's time to be cautious now. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I mean, it does. It does and it doesn't. I mean, what's interesting is since 2009, this year the S&P is up 18.75. I calculated this from like a week ago. And the Russell is up 2.63. It's the widest spread between the S&P and the Russell since 2009. So basically, complete underperformance by the Russell. And you could actually get rid of the Russell and just put RSP in, and it's going to be the same thing for RSP. I don't know how far back RSP goes. I don't know if it goes all the way back to 2009 or not.
So
but
20,
the point is,
actually,
I mean, we're only here's what I'm concerned about. I'll just lay it out for you. I think December could be a shitstorm. Why? Because we only have 42% of stocks up now for the year. Yeah, we're up from 33 at the end of October. That's number one. Number two, buybacks have ended. So companies are done buying back stock. So that's not a concern anymore. You still have tax selling that needs to be done by hedge funds, registered investment advisors, financial advisors, and individuals. So that definitely puts pressure on the market as well. Now, having said that, I think this could be a complete replay of last year, where we have an incredible January. Why? Because short sellers have made a ton of money, and they're going to wait to harvest their gains until January, so they don't have to pay taxes until 25. So I think it could be like this rally could be done. And what do you think of yesterday? I mean, look, the Qs at one point yesterday were at 394, and now we're down to 388 in 2 days. All the big guys underperformed dramatically yesterday in tech. So that's kind of my last question for you. You know, are you not concerned about the spread between the S&P and the Russell, number one? And number two, what do you think about yesterday? And now it's continuing today, too.
Yeah, Jeff, it's a real concern, but one that, and again, Jeff, let's frame the concern in this way. This sort of condition exists at every major market top. Every decline of 50 to 60% in stocks has been preceded by exactly this condition. It is always present.
Yeah.
Always present.
Isn't that lovely?
So you know, the question is, are we going to start a two-year bear market next year that puts the S&P down 55%, or is the market going to show some broadening out, right? Because I don't think it's going to broaden out now.
Well, we haven't. I mean, here's the point. We've had zero broadening out in November. That's the canary in the coal mine,
right?
If you
and
will.
Generally, by the way, those big bear markets start after a narrow market that lasts 1.5 to 2 years.
Oh, and we've had that in the Russell.
It hasn't really been 2 years, but yeah, we're basically there.
Well, look, Russell in 22 lost 21.56%. By number through, I think it was the close of the 24th, it was 2.63%. So you add those together, you're like a minus 19. If you look at the other down periods, 2011, the Russell lost 5.45. The next year it was up 14. In 15, it lost 5.71. The next year it was up 19. In 18, it lost 17%. The next year it was up 23%. I mean, the one thing we haven't done is we had a shitty year last year and we didn't get a rebound this year. So that, in theory, could make the potential for next year even that much better.
Even that much better. And Jeff, one of the things you mentioned that I hear when you say is, and we'll let people ask some questions. But when I hear you say there's going to be an awful lot of short covering, right? What I hear is that means that those stocks that are being covered are probably going to advance in price, wouldn't you say?
Absolutely.
And they would advance in price. So
here's what I didn't say too. So like, let me give you one more piece of information that you don't have that I have. So we just got the latest short interest data. It was from trade data the 27th of October, which is the low, and we started rallying off of that through the 13th of November, which is like basically where the Russell kind of peaked out, and shorts added like 1% for New York and added 1.07% for NASDAQ. I mean, it's if you had asked me how I thought the shorts would have done, I think Jack would have said the same thing. And anyone who's been a long-term client of ours would say the same thing. There should have been some covering. There was Zippo covering. And now I have a stat, Fred, just kind of a crazy stat. The percentage of stocks that have been covered since the absolute low on short interest back in 2021 on NASDAQ is like 5%, and on New York is like 12%, which means that basically people are just sitting on their gains, and they're like, I don't need to cover, you know? So, like, they haven't even felt the pain yet of having to cover.
Right. So, but what that means, Jeff, is if those stocks start going up, that would be the very definition of the market broadening out, wouldn't it?
Yeah, and to your point, I created a index this week on – I sorted all stocks by market cap, and I looked at everything that was down 15% or more for the year so far. So I've got a list spread of 33 names. So, like, what I want to do in December is just watch that list to see if in fact, those names are being sold or they're not being sold.
Yeah.
Make sense?
Yeah, no, that does. And obviously we can put some information out on that as that happens. But the real point of what you're saying, and I'm coming at this from one way, you're coming at it from another, and if I can get these fundamental guys to come on in January, they're coming on at it from a fundamental perspective. The market has got to start to broaden out. And it should start in January.
Or if it doesn't.
If it doesn't, well, not even Katie bar the door, but we're, you know, unfortunately, Jeff, for our type of client, you can't tell them liquidate your entire stock portfolio and sit in cash for 2 years, right? The risk of being wrong on that is way high, and that's not, and they would lose their clients. In other words, when Chuck Clow basically said that that's what we needed to do in 1998, he ended up being fired, and our clients would be fired if they did that, and it was wrong, and may even be fired if it was right. Right.
Yep.
But we are going to have to be a little bit more careful. So, you know, you see what I'm saying, and we need to stop pontificating and let the people answer
the
calls.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
But
let's go to Q&A.
Ask some questions. But there's also, I guess let me put this as the final message for a couple of people that have asked me this if they're on the call. Is now the time to get rid of value stocks and the stuff like RSP that hasn't performed as well this year? Is now the time to do that? And I think the answer to that question is now is exactly the wrong time to do that.
Oh, I agree with you. Because
we might be 3 weeks away, or four, I guess it's till November 30th, so using my amazing abilities of calculation, we'll say 4 weeks away, 4 weeks rather than 3 weeks away. We may be 4 weeks away from when those vehicles start to outperform.
Well, hey, Fred, listen to this. This is just kind of interesting. It's anecdotal, and I know it's not your favorite ETFs for value and growth, but IVE is up by 8.71%, and IVW growth of S&P is up by 8.30%. So, in fact, value is beating growth, which in certain ways, I mean, yeah, I get there are certain things that shouldn't be in there, blah, blah, blah. But the fact is, with RSP underperforming so badly, wouldn't you expect that like value would be lagging? And the fact that it isn't is actually really telling to me.
Yeah. Well, Jeff, one of the things, and again, we'll stop on this and let questions, but every advisor on the call, when he's got a minute, should simply put in his charting mechanism two ETFs and look at them. Look at RPG, which is pure growth, and RPV, which is pure value. And what you see is what Jeff was saying about the other ones, value is outperforming, right?
Yeah.
What's happened is the words tech and growth, and really big tech and growth, have become synonyms. They're not.
Yep.
Right?
I'm going to come back at the very end and ask you another question.
Sure, but let's see if there's any questions. So questions from the field.
Hey, Fred, could I follow on that?
Yeah.
Fred, John Hoffman, Minneapolis.
Hey there.
Would you sell your Google, your Amazon, your Apple, your
I know what you're asking, John. It's a great question. I'm glad you asked it. It's very, very hard to imagine a market that's going to do well without those with those stocks all going straight down. Right. One of the reasons for that is because there's such big cap weightings. Okay. Now, what can happen, and what I think is going to happen, is those stocks will be underperforms for a while, right?
Okay.
But we'll have time to evaluate that. You see what I'm saying? In other words, it's not like when I look at Google that I think we're in immediate danger of Google going to 90, right? I don't think we're in immediate danger of that at all. What I think we are in danger of is the stock going down, the rest of the market a little bit, say to 128, people piling in while the rest of the market is doing very well, and it stays in between 128 and 140 for 6 months. You see what I'm saying?
Oh, okay, yeah. Well, you look at a stock like IBM outperforming NVIDIA, right, or whatever.
Yeah, IBM could do very, very well. There's a number of things like this that could do well. IBM, I'm told, is, and I know very little about it, is a big artificial intelligence play, and it's certainly doing better right now than some of the other ones, right?
Right.
So the trick is going to be, you know, and again, if you look at the chart of RPG, right, that weekly chart of RPG going back to 2022, it's a giant base, right?
Right.
It's certainly not terrible, and if you look at RPV, which I think is outperforming, Jeff would have to do the calculations, but it's a giant high-level consolidation, right? In other words, these aren't giant peaks. It's one of the reasons why I've stayed overweight healthcare, because healthcare isn't in the Magnificent Seven, and you look at that high level consolidation going back to October of 2022, and one of my favorite things, you know, Joe Granville was a wonderful promoter. One of the things Joe Granville always said was, the higher the diving board, the bigger the splash. Right? Well, this is a giant, long diving board. This thing could really take off. And I think that would surprise people. I think most people aren't positioned for that. So what I'm saying is I'm not changing strategies right now for next year. I think we're in the right strategy for next year, or we've got so many problems market-wise that no strategy is going to be helpful. Either way, we're going to know, I think, in 6-7 weeks. And I would be willing to make a small side bet, John. The next time I come to Minneapolis, you buy me a really good hamburger. I know a place. there. Craig Johnson from Piper took me to this great hamburger place. You can take me there and buy me a hamburger.
Okay, we'll do it.
But my bet is that this market surprises by going up and changing leadership in a way that people aren't expecting. That's my bet.
Okay. Well, that's the reason I was asking you to sell the growth and buy the value, you know.
No, I think, you know, John, if this happens, a couple things. First of all, it's going to last for a long time. You don't have to be in right away. You know what they always say about the pioneers on the CBOE, right? Pioneers are the ones with the arrows in their backs, right? We don't have to be first here, but we have to acknowledge it's going on and do it and go with it early. And I think, I mean, Apple, Google, these are great companies. They're bastions of the economy, but those stocks can go sideways for a long time. The nature of stocks is they make a move to discount fundamentals, and then the favorable fundamentals come out, and the stocks don't move for a while. And that's where I think we could be on some of these.
All right.
So,
thank you.
Did I answer your question?
Pretty much, yeah. Yeah.
Good.
You didn't tell me to move, though. It said stay where you're at.
Yeah, at this point, I'm going to stay where I am and just make sure that the stuff that I have is stuff that I really want to have if the market starts to do well. In other words, do I have a stock that's going to do really, really well? Or, you know, and you can do that by looking at charts. You look at Bristol Myers, BMY, right? That stock is trading as well as I would say. Jeff would say, like, it hasn't done diddly. I would say the stock is trading in a manner that is reminiscent of fecal material.
Right.
Which is a polite way of saying the stock isn't doing well. But there's other drug stocks that look vastly better. Look at Merck, right? So the question is, am I in Merck and not in Bristol-Myers? Not am I in drugs when I should be only in NVIDIA? Those are two separate questions. And I think the answer is you want to be in good drugs. Yeah, you want to have NVIDIA, but you don't want to sell all the stuff that's been going sideways and put it in something that's worked well over the last year.
Right.
Okay. Let's see if there's some other questions. I've talked way too much on this call. Other questions?
Hey, Fred.
Yes, sir.
Quick question following up on the small cap pain trade. We've all got scars from trying to anticipate the move there. And question is, maybe said in a different way from I think what you've been saying, is would it be correct to say that a January effect could start mid next month? And that might be a good time to, if you're looking to dabble, you know, position in. I mean, do you see, Jeff talked about all those shorts, and obviously, you know, there's going to be more people that they may be waiting to see tech selling. I'm just out loud here.
Yeah, Scott, I think, you know, you'll want to be positioned in some of those names by December 31st that you think are going to be the ones that work.
Doesn't that start sort of mid-month?
That's why I generally do the tax bounce list December 15th.
Right.
But they may not move in the last 2 weeks of December, but at the same time, you want to be in them because they should start to move fairly early in January. And we saw that last year, for example.
Exactly.
Yeah, I mean, okay. Tesla, God help it, went from 100, you know, to 300 in that time.
Cool.
But and you were in it, but it didn't really start until January. So, yeah, I think you do want to be positioning.
And one other sort of thematic or whatever frustration question, you know, too long-term, you know, from the lower left to the upper right groups, you know, healthcare and financials have been, you know, kind of sucky over the, you know, this past. And just no momentum, but just a really nice base. From a technical perspective, I guess. So, I mean, are we meant to try to anticipate those two groups? I mean, they should outperform next year, right? I mean,
Well, Scott, this is, I think they will, and I think you want to have quality names. Now, my little strategy that we talked about buying things like Fifth Third Bank at the end of the third quarter, you know, coming into the fourth quarter, because that's when institutions start to come back to those big surprise stocks, that seems to be working reasonably well. What I don't think people are thinking is that that's going to keep working next year and work really, really well, right, which is what I think you're asking. And I think that's very possible.
Same with healthcare?
Yeah. Yeah. I think healthcare's got huge potential. And, you know, the big argument I hear against it is it's an election year, so everyone's going to beat up on all the healthcare companies and they're not going to make any money.
So in that regard, would you be going for the trades like the biotech, which is in the seller?
You know, I would probably be looking for the best charts. XBI is actually above resistance now. That could actually work fairly well. It's a base. But the real thing is to look at, I think I used Merck and Bristol-Myers as an example. If you've got the Bristol-Myers type stocks in there that have what I call, or actually what my old friend John Brooks used to call, the glide path of a brick, you want to start to take losses in those and go into stuff like Merck that's got decent fundamentals and is a high-level consolidation, right? And get rid of the stuff that's obviously not working really well. In other words, when I look at a stock like Bristol-Myers, I mean, that's a major company. It's not a fly-by-night company with no earnings. It's a major drug company. When I look at how that's trading versus Merck, I have to think that there's something wrong with Bristol-Myers relative to Merck. Right.
Appreciate
and they're
that.
Both drug companies. So the question is, will Bristol-Myers work as well, because if it's got something wrong with it, as Merck, which may not have anything wrong with it? And I think the answer is Merck is going to work better.
Appreciate that. I'll just close out with one last. I think the group might appreciate this idea. It's an index that selects and weights emerging market based on personal and economic freedom metrics. Ticker symbol is FRDM, and it's kicking EEM's butt. It's up 11.65%. Can you take a look at that chart? And
It looks better than EEM does, and it still doesn't look exemplary, but it certainly looks better than EEM does. I love the idea.
I actually sent you an email on it, so.
Right. You know, and I might have missed that because, Scott,
no,
I got 12 dogs here.
It's at the beginning of the call, so no worries.
Got it. Okay. And I need to talk to you about my golfing buddy.
Cool. I've just been slammed, but thank you.
I know. So have I. That's the fun part of this year is being slammed. Plus, I have 12 dogs. They're cute. Do you want a German Shepherd?
No, thanks.
Okay. Very good. Thank you, Scott. We'll talk in a bit. Hey, other questions?
Right. It's Paul.
Paul, how are you?
Well, if you're looking at health stocks, I think Johnson & Johnson might be worth a look here.
Yeah.
In terms of coming out of its doldrums in terms of health. Next question was cyber stocks have done incredibly well on this rally. Looking for an entry place to add to Palo Alto Networks and Zscaler. So, Paul, Apple, Nancy, Whiskey.
All Apple, Nancy, Whiskey. There's not going to be a way to add to that gracefully before the end of the year, Paul. If you want this one, you should probably just buy it.
Got it.
Because this is one of those, you know, I would not normally say that, but at the end of the year, this is one of those ones that people are going to want. And what's the other one?
Zulu Sam.
Let me check one thing, because this looks slightly worse.
Oh, definitely.
And actually, you can buy some at right here. The difference between my buy price, which is 195.90 and 196.73, is relatively low. And if for any reason it gets to 191, you could certainly try it there too.
Thank you, Fred.
Got it. It was great seeing you guys, by the way. I had a great time. I owe an email response to Jengus's question or Neil's question. I'm going to do that.
Awesome time, as always. Thank you, Fred.
Be safe. Other questions?
Hey, Fred. I know you mentioned IBM, so it looks like a little bit of a breakout here on the weekly. Where do you think this thing could run to?
You know, that's hard to say, but I would certainly say that it's one you want to own and just stick with as long as the trend is up. But you've probably got at least 10 points in this, maybe more.
Yeah, it looks like a nice rounding bottom on the monthly chart.
Yeah.
And kind of a base for, 10 years. So they said, what's the saying? Longer the base, higher in space.
Yeah, and what's really nice is you read all these articles about hot tech stocks and things, because I do look at those occasionally. I don't see IBM in there. Right? They're not even talking about it.
Exactly.
So, I mean, that to me is the classic ingredients of something that's got a good bit more to run.
Yeah. Let me ask you, do you follow any of those Whaley or Zwig breath thrusts, or do you not, you're not a big fan?
No, not really. The Zwig breath thrust is an interesting indicator. The problem is it failed several times in 2022, and it's failed at other times. And one of the things that's so interesting about it is they're now trying to justify the failures by saying that when interest rates are high, that it doesn't work. Okay.
I don't see one. I'm looking here, all the ones in the last 60 years. I see two in 2023 and one in 2019. I'm not seeing one in 2022 on the list that I'm looking at.
I've got people that keep that, and they keep it in a couple of different ways. But they certainly didn't work in 2022. They happened right at the bottom. We actually had some really good breath thrusts in 2022. What I'm looking at, frankly, is, and this is, by the way, this is downright super scary. This is something that I would have to call Tom McClellan and ask him. But the McClellan, I'll give you the numbers. The McClellan Summation Index, which is one of the very best indicators of breadth strength, that's out there is, I'm going to let you know in just a minute, but I believe this is the first time ever that the summation index has been negative with the market 10% from new highs, except for 1972.
I went back and looked at the 70s and the 90s, you know, where we had these mega, you know, the Nifty 50 and all the big tech names. It looks like when we went into recessions, which is counterintuitive, that's when we broadened out. You know, so we may go into a growth scare next year,
yeah,
but the market kind of broadened out. You know what I mean?
That's what I'm expecting. It's either that or we're going to start to have problems. And again, when you look at all of those big declines that were more than 20%, there was a fundamental issue that you could point to, in some cases two or three fundamental issues that you could point to. You couldn't tell when things were going to start, but those fundamentals were there, and you could point at them. You know, in the 70s, certainly high inflation, OPEC and high oil prices, that was the first time we had OPEC, and the Vietnam War were super big causes for concern. And so the question is, you know, is the inflation we're having now and the wars in Ukraine and Israel similar to the war in Vietnam and the high inflation we had? And my answer to that, and again, I'm fortunate, well, I was going to say I'd be fortunate to be younger, but I am, at least for our job here, fortunate enough to be old enough to remember what was going on back then and what people were thinking and feeling and what I was thinking and feeling. And with regard to inflation back then, we put, and again, if you're old enough, you know, correct me. OPEC had just come out. Oil prices quadrupled. They were never going to go down again because OPEC was all powerful. And that meant huge structural inflation was built in a way that nobody had been expecting or had experienced really since World War II. There was that. The big problem with the war in Vietnam, as opposed to the war in Ukraine and the war in the Middle East, is the United States was in Vietnam. We all knew people that were there. Most of us knew people that had been killed, right? That's a big difference from what we got now. Those two things, right?
Yeah. Now, this inflation seems to be more transitory, I guess, if you will.
Well, yeah, and so the real question is, are we going to see inflation abate and then come roaring back here for some reason? And obviously, that's certainly possible, and that's a risk. And if we see that, we're going to react appropriately.
It's all about how they calculate it. Yeah, because if you look at used cars and shelter, it's like 60% of, you know, of the CPI basket. Those are like, especially used cars, I mean, they're deflating. And forget about inflation, they're in deflation.
Yeah.
Right now, and I think they're at 18% year over year. And I think home prices are cooling down, you know. So, yeah, I think
it's different now. It's not the same as it was in the 70s. If my dear friend and colleague Bob Robbins is on the call and wants to contribute to that. Because Bob was one of the people, by the way, that really showed me that in the aggregate, over the long term, stock prices follow inflation. They're inversely correlated. When inflation is coming down, stocks do well. When inflation is going up, stocks can do very badly. Right?
Yeah, which we peaked. If we peaked, I think the market bottomed right at the peak of inflation.
And that's very possible, yeah. So the real question is, or a question is, the market hasn't broadened out yet. Why is that? Why hasn't the market broadened out yet? Right? That's the question.
If we look at November on that question to broadening out, I know Jeff was mentioning now, like November, I know it's just 1 month, but if we look at like SPY up nearly close to 9%, I mean, IWM is up double digits. I mean, again, it's just 1 month, but it hasn't been a narrow market in November either. Like there's been more participation than we've seen, you know, in recent months. You know, RSP is outperforming SPY in November. So I think it's starting.
So you're starting.
But one
so
month,
I
you know,
think
you know,
you're starting
month,
to
yeah.
see it. And again,
yeah.
you're not going to flip a light switch and suddenly have the market become broad. The one thing that might flip that light switch is Jeff's idea that you're going to see a bunch of short covering.
Yeah.
But
I like your idea. By the end of January, if we haven't seen more broadening out, I think we got to be concerned for the
yeah, and being concerned, believe me, I lived through as an investment analyst 99 to 2003-2004, and I did just fine. I lived through the financial crisis and had good forecasts and stuff. I lost my job at Merrill Lynch, but what the hell, you can't have everything. And that actually, in many respects, was a huge boon to me. It was one of the best things that ever happened to me, right? But the point is, I didn't suddenly turn into an idiot for 2 years and then suddenly get smart again when the market started going up. We'll do fine during that, but it will be harder. So.
All right. Appreciate it, man. We'll let somebody else jump in.
Good. Let's have some more questions. I don't have to be anywhere for over half an hour. So more questions. And we're sorry I've gone on so long about this stuff. Other questions?
Brett, I'll throw a couple out if that's okay.
Sure, Steve.
Starbucks, SBUX.
There's that huge gap at 95 that looks ready to fill, Steve.
Yeah.
It's not a terrible stock, and I would put in orders to buy it at 96.5, figuring it may not fill the whole gap.
Okay.
And the intermediate is a consolidation, so I'm not particularly worried about it.
Okay. TPR.
Tom Paul Robert.
Yep.
That's a nice-looking little base. It's actually a right shoulder on the daily. So I've got no problem playing this and trying to get it to 34 or so.
Okay.
And let's see if it does better than that. But, I mean, there's certainly nothing wrong with buying it.
Okay. AB.
Apple Bimbo?
Yep.
Sorry, my military call signs. You know, that's, again, a potential head and shoulders bottom. If it can get, it looks like it's going to get to 30, and if it can get above 30, you've probably got a $33 stock on you.
BHP?
Boy, Harry Pierre. That looks like a peak at 62.50, and there is a gap. So I would, if you're at all nervous about that thing trading to 58 to 59, I would say off it. Otherwise, hold it, and if it gets to 58 or 59 and stabilizes, you can add to the position.
Okay. DLR?
Dog Larry Robert?
Yep.
You know, that, let me, it looks a little bit better than some of these REITs, so that would be one to have if you want REITs, but there's a fair amount of resistance between 138 and 142 that would make me just a tad nervous.
With the exception of Starbucks, those are all higher dividend stocks, so just interested to see what they look like. And just a couple more, BROS, Dutch Bros.
Bros.
Yep, Bros.
Yeah. You know, Steve, that's got to show something to me, like getting above 31 before I get real interested. It's kind of dead looking.
Okay. PINS, P-I-N-S?
P-I-N-S, Paul, okay. Pinterest.
Yep.
That's trying to come out of a nice little base. I would certainly say that that's one that could run into the end of the year, and that would put it around 36.
Penn, P-E-N-N.
But every time I hear Penn, I keep thinking of Penn Central, which was my first big scandal, fiasco, collapse in the business right after I became a broker. You know, I don't really like this one, Steve. If it were to pull back to 23.50 and hold it, I could try it, but I think it's going to go to 23.50 before it goes anywhere else.
Okay. Last one. I keep thinking I'm forgetting one, but that's great. Thank you, Fred. Appreciate it as always.
Very good. It's always a pleasure. We will chat soon.
Thanks, buddy.
Gotcha. Other questions? Very well. We'll say going once.
Fred, hey, Bob Robbins here.
Bob, how are you? Good to hear your voice.
I'm doing okay. How are you?
Good.
Look, do you have a favorite Argentine stock? And I'd like your opinion on GGAL.
You know,
girl,
I was going to say GGAL was probably my favorite Argentine stock. And actually, I had a question from someone on the call about what you thought, an email a couple of days ago on what you thought about GGAL. I think it looks fine, Bob. I'm looking at the weekly chart. It looks to me like a brand new weekly trending buy. It's overbought, but that's not a concern. If this makes it above 18, this could be 23-24. And, Bob, I think that this development in Argentina is significant. Friends of mine down there are really excited for the first time in a long time.
No kidding. This is the change from Peronist to socialism and or communism to capitalism.
And Bob, they do that periodically. I mean, one of the problems with Argentina is you look where it was relative to the United States in the 19th century, and you look where it is now. Obviously, we were doing something right, and they were not. But this change should last long enough to get this stock into the low 20s, I think.
Yeah. The newly elected president wants to go to the dollar and burn down the central bank.
Well, Bob, the last time I was in Buenos Aires, they did try something similar. The Argentinian peso was pegged at like 3 to the dollar. And that was 2007, Bob. I mean, it wasn't like that was 50 years ago.
Yeah. Right. Inflation's been running at 140%. The reason this looks more durable, one of the reasons this looks more durable as a change in the government of Argentina is that the socialists, the Peronists, in a last-ditch, desperate attempt to by votes, cut the income taxes on the lower brackets to zero and cut sales taxes on certain key staples to zero. And that still didn't win the election. They still, the Peronists lost 44% to 56%. So it does appear that the country has made a durable shift to capitalism. And GGAL, if you look at a monthly chart, it's a classic, pretty much a classic William O'Neill cup and saucer, you know, huge decline from the 2018 to 2020 low, then an enormous 3 years base, and the handle in the last year or so, and now tremendous acceleration for good reasons, in my opinion. So I think the stock can double in the next year. It's one of my favorites.
Bob, I think it's certainly, if I can get it to 25 and it doesn't double, I'll worry about it at 25, but those are the sort of problems I like to have.
Mm-hmm.
So,
okay.
But it very well could. And people that haven't been in Argentina just don't understand how amazingly screwed up that country can be, even though it's gorgeous. The other thing that was very significant in this election, Bob, was the new party, the people that won also won sizable sections of Buenos Aires. It wasn't just the rest of the country and beating Buenos Aires. And Buenos Aires has always been the Peronist sort of stronghold.
Interesting. All right.
Good enough. Any other comments, Bob, about inflation or anything like that since I have you here and we're both old? Sorry.
I think you got to keep in mind when the Fed stops hiking, historically, the average gain in the S&P 500 is 19%. So we're not sure that the Fed stopped hiking, but if they hadn't, then we can tack another 19% on. The market's gone much higher than most observers have thought. And I keep mentioning that the price earnings, the normal price earnings ratio, is a whole lot higher as a result of our shift in 1980 to 82 from essentially a recessionary monetary policy where you have recessions every 4 years to a disinflationary monetary policy where you don't have recessions and bear markets every 4 years. And so naturally, with that being a less cyclical, less economically cyclical path in the last decades, the PE ratio should be higher relative to interest rates. And I think that's what we're seeing.
Yeah. Bob, there's one other thing that I think is really interesting here, because I happen to be talking to Nick Kalivas in Invesco. He's one of their strategists. You know that the PE on RSP, the equally weighted S&P, is 15, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay.
That's important.
Versus the PE on SPY in the 20s.
Yeah.
Right. In other words, the broad market is not overvalued on a PE basis at all.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I kind of let the trends speak for themselves on the leadership of the market. Go with the trends that are outperforming on a three-month basis and stay with them until they underperform and sell them.
Yeah.
That works pretty well.
Okay, yeah, you know me. I'm always trying to anticipate them, but that's
yeah.
fun at this.
I find it very difficult to do that, yeah. Okay.
Okay, well, Bob, thank you. Merry Christmas.
Thank you.
Let's see if there's some more questions.
Brett, Steve Smith.
Steve, I think you just got the answer I was going to email you about, correct?
Yeah, you did. Thank you and Bob for covering GGAL. I wanted to follow up, and I guess Bob really addressed this as well. If in the event of a nice rally after the last Fed cut, you know, be that 19% or what have you, is there expectation of continued leadership in the same group, or does it broaden out, or does it shift? And perhaps
I think you're
going to
see
that, you know,
a shift.
It
I think you have to.
Okay.
Or at least different stocks within the same groups. But I think some of these long bases and consolidations like healthcare and things will do well. I mean, Steve, I'm looking, frankly, at some of these, you know, banks. We mentioned Fifth Third, which is getting ready to break out of its little base that it built after the collapse. You look at Bank of America. There's no reason why Bank of America, which has got better-looking indicators, can't suddenly start to outperform JPM, which has done really well but is overbought. Right?
Okay, right.
So I think we should be looking I'm looking for opportunities like that. Bob is obviously correct in that you want to play the best performers, but one of the things that I think really could happen here, and we mentioned this at the beginning of the call, but I'll mention it again. What if the leadership isn't the Magnificent Seven and those stocks sort of start to underperform and other stuff starts to do much better? That's my guess. That's what I think needs to happen, right? But within that context, you know, do your fundamental analysis, which, Steve, I know you do very well, but also watch the performance. If something that is also has been underperforming is performing better than something that you like that's underperforming, you're going to want to make some switches probably.
Certainly the banks and some of the other interest-sensitive things can do better next year if we have inflation that continues to drift lower and overall rates settle back somewhat.
I think even if rates stay about where they are, I mean, honestly, Steve, these rates remind me an awful lot of the 90s when I was buying my first house, right? And the real question is, or the 80s, and the real question is, would you rather live in the 80s and 90s economy or this one? You're old enough to have an answer to that question. Right? See what I'm saying?
Yes, the zero interest rates are.
We would much rather.
Or an anomaly. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Right.
Yeah. So I'm not concerned so much with the level of interest rates. Interest rate and inflationary expectations are obviously what's important, but we can do just fine with interest rates and such at this in, at this level. Good. Steve, let me see if there's any more questions before 11:30, because I know some people have a hard cutoff themselves to get off at 11:30. Any questions from other people?
Fred, a thought. This is something that Jeff and I have talked about at length, and it's something I think a lot of people have seemingly lost sight of. It has to do with the inflation, and obviously it looks like it is abating. But what folks are forgetting is that we've already inflated to a higher level of prices. And so maybe things aren't quite as rosy as maybe expected to be.
No, that's absolutely true. And a lot of prices aren't going to come down again. That's a risk.
To follow what you just spoke of a moment ago, Bank America, where are you on that right now?
I am a seller of Bank America for traders that or advisors that have what they feel is too much of it at 30.50 to 31, which it has hit.
Okay.
But on a long-term basis, I would hold it. And again, many of the people, to clarify this for people like you, Alan, or somebody that works at Morgan Stanley, many of the people that I'm talking to that are trying to sell it at 30.50 wanted to sell some before the end of the year. And also, frankly, their problem is not that they're never going to get any more Bank of America, right? Merrill producers get Bank of America every year. The question is, you know, if it's 80% of your portfolio and it goes from 50 to 25, you begin to think, ah, perhaps this is what that diversification I tell all my clients about actually means, right?
Very good.
Yeah, so on that basis, I'm a seller at 30.50. This is the target I had by the end of the year, and I'm done with it. But I'm holding the banks that I have. I don't have Bank of America, but I like the stock. The one that I have here, again, because remember, Alan, I'm not even going to tell you the one that I have here, but remember when the whole banking thing hit, I was buying regional bank, not the money centers.
Right? Yes, sir.
And I think the regionals actually have got some real potential here to do well.
Very good. Agreed.
Yes. Thank you.
Thank you, Fred.
You're welcome, Alan. You have a good Christmas. Any other questions from people in the field, as it were? Very good. Then we'll say going once, going twice. Very well. This will end the Fred Report technical market call for November 30th. Geez, I can't believe it's November 30th, 2023. My last note is anybody who's interested in the German Shepherd puppy, please do email me. Have a great day. And happy holidays. Ho, ho, ho.